Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to WithInsightsRadio.com on the Blog Talk Radio Network, your free online holistic publication resource radio for trusting your intuition, achieving self-discovery, and following your soul self.
Good evening and welcome to tonight's Namenha Radio Discussion. I'm your host, Chief Cloud Piler, and I'm here with co-host Chief Willimantkin. And I want to give some special thanks to Chief Ignacio Garcia and With Insights Radio for helping us put this thing together. Hey, you know, Chief Willimantkin, tonight I wanted to talk about the real state of the natural medicine in the United States, kind of the state of union of natural medicine. I don't know if we're qualified to make a State of the Union address on natural medicine or not, but, you know, I've been looking at this, and when I started in natural medicine almost, well, technically almost 20 years ago, but as a naturopath, I began as almost 20 years ago, I think 18 or 19 years. Before that, I was a master herbalist, and so I was involved in natural medicine for many years before and during my studies and you know, blah, blah, blah. It happens that way. But way back then, 20-some-odd years ago, I remember reading that, well, actually, I was reading it from the itinerary at the naturopathic big convention, naturopathic medical convention in Las Vegas, and there were flyers all over the place. And just about every single flyer talked about how food supplements had reached $500 million a year.
Oh, boy.
$500 million a year. And everybody was doing the dance of joy all over the place. This was, you know, back in the late 90s. You know, that seemed like a lot. That seemed like a whole lot. You know, $500 million. Dang.
Well, yeah.
Today, that was some 20 years ago, and it was groundbreaking to meet to reach that point. Today, it's estimated that in the United States and Canada, put together, run somewhere near $50 billion a year through their population in food supplements. So we've gone from $500 million a year, which we thought was, you know, fantastic, and upwards of $50 billion. And I don't know what the distribution there between the United States and Canada is, but I thought that was an interesting number, because that is not an order of magnitude. That's two orders of magnitude greater in 20 years. That's a ton. That's a ton. So if you're talking two orders of magnitude more food supplements are swallowed in this country and in, you know, the English-speaking countries in North America than were swallowed 20 years ago. So you would think that with that much more food supplement, bear in mind, food supplements are something that, you know, people take at home.
Yeah.
It's not something that requires a procedure. It doesn't even require that you go in and talk to anybody with any competence. You swallow these things at home, right? That's huge. And you would think then you would, your ego mind, as I've heard it referred to, would, you know, as it sits down and thinks about those kind of numbers, would have to assume, sort of, as foolish as that might be, that people are two orders of magnitude smarter about natural medicine than they were 20 years ago. How do you feel about that?
You know how I feel about supplements.
Are we two orders of magnitude smarter as a population? I have to say we are not. And here's the state of natural medicine today. We live in a state where there isn't a license to practice natural medicine. And so in a way that's really, I don't know, a lot of people get real comfortable with that because, you know, it's not against the law, so you're safe. But in another way, it means that anytime any public servant gets a cross hair or a wild hair in their craw, they can say what you're doing in natural medicine is actually the unauthorized practice of medicine. So in you're a practitioner here in the state of Missouri. Mm-hmm. What is your working definition or the difference between, what do you understand the difference between medicine and natural medicine is?
I would have to say medicine and natural medicine. You have to add allopathic, or you have to add conventional or institutional medicine before medicine, by definition.
Okay, so traditional medicine today is not the medicine that our great-great-grandparents practiced.
No.
That common everyday thing that seemed to work, except in things like some of the infectious diseases and that sort of thing, which have been largely solved by sanitation, but seen in terms of chronic illness, seem to work a lot better than what we have today per capita. The traditional medicine is not the tradition of our fathers. Traditional medicine today is allopathic medicine.
Yeah.
So that anything that you mentioned that isn't the traditional medicine is the out in the air stuff, out in the whack job stuff, the woo-hoo medicine they call what we do. So what we do is more like what our great-grandparents did, with more science and with more sanitation and with probably a little more sanity. And yet we're called, you know, fringe or alternative in the state where we live. Well, that's kind of the way it is just about everywhere. Even in states with the licensure, you're still, you know, out there. You're not in traditional medicine, because allopathic medicine has become traditional. Allopathy comes from a combination. It's a kind of a made-up word, which is not uncommon. Allo meaning against, or to go against, or to fight against, and pathy meaning what's wrong with you. So the doctor in traditional medicine today, in America at least, is fighting against the disease. It's doing everything, he or she is doing everything they can to beat the disease. It's a war against the disease. Whereas traditional medicine as we see it is to work with the bodies, or what we call naturopathy, naturopathy, or physiopathy. They're essentially the same thing. But that works with the body's intrinsic ability to heal itself, utilizing all the materials and objects and technologies provided by nature. So we're assisting and enhancing the body's own natural healing, intrinsic healing ability. Traditional medicine or allopathy is nowhere near that, because you must fight against the disease. And there is this kind of nod, I think, towards the body's ability to heal. I mean, your medical doctor is going to stitch you up and, you know, sew you back together. And there is a nod to the fact that the body does knit and the bones come together and you heal.
Yes.
But not without the doc, right?
No. It's more a matter acceptance of the fact that we will recover from the procedure regenerate or rejuvenate.
Right. Recover means to heal that. But, you know, to the naturopath and to the physiopath, you know, there may be some stitching that needs to be done. You know, we'll nod to the fact, hey, look at, if my grandkid falls out of a tree and breaks her head open and her brain is laying out there, you know, I as a naturopath am not running over there and putting a plaster on there, right?
I should hope not.
We're gonna transport immediately, right? So there's some common sense involved here, but we do really, in natural medicine, we hope that across the board we're talking about and kind of concentrating on the body's ability to step in there and do the healing, regardless of what procedures or what materials. It's really the body that does the healing, because it's intrinsically in there. So when we talk about the state of natural healing as a profession and as an industry in this country, what I'm interested in ferreting out is how really true to that concept have we held ourselves. The medical doctor is, you know, in a lamentable position right now. I was just, you and I both just visited with a sufferer last night who got an insect bite, had the rash, the fever, the joint aches, the headache, and that sort of stuff. You know, and we know what is going on there. Mm-hmm. That should have been paid attention to right there. But really, in the medical profession, you would not receive any treatment Until there are overt symptoms. So you'd have to go in with the fever, the muscle pain,
right,
the joint pain, the headache, the neck ache. These are all things that are precursor to, insect bite encephalitis. And there are various kinds, the Rocky Mountain spotted fever, Lyme's, and the rickettsial encephalitis, meningitis, and that sort of thing. They would give a couple of antibiotics within the first 5 days.
Right.
What about after those 5 days? What if a person doesn't get in, has all those symptoms, and they're kind of lingering, but it's like the 10th day? What do they do?
IV. Bed rest.
Probably not IV unless they're hospitalized.
If you have a fever. If you don't have a fever, then you're pretty much down for the count.
Yeah, if your fever goes really high and you start taking convulsions, and they take you to the hospital, and the first thing you get in the hospital is an IV, fluids, and bed rest, and that's about it. And they'll give you the antibiotic, understanding that that antibiotic is probably, except maybe in 3% of cases, going to be ineffective after that fifth day. In allopathic medicine, you run into that all the time. We've got another sufferer that we're working with who, had symptoms, and the symptoms were treated by allopathy in several different ways. And when they didn't go away, the knee-jerk reaction was, this patient needs to be on psychotropic drugs.
Yes.
It's like when you run out of materials in allopathic medicine for the chronic and degenerative diseases, when you run out of materials, when you run out of the symptoms or the disease's symptoms to fight against, to go battle against, you run out of practice. You don't have anything left. And so, they'll default to a number of different things.
Just slough them off to the psychiatrist.
Yeah, because the medical doctor knows that for this, there is, for this condition or this set of symptoms, there's these drugs that are effective. And for these other conditions or symptoms, there's this surgery or procedure, right, or this or that. They have these long lines of things that they can just throw at a disease, and that's the practice of their medicine, right? That is what they're allowed to do. Well, who decides what they're allowed to do? The medical doctor.
Well, their insurance company.
Well, if they're, if they take insurance.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a common lament that we run into with the medical doctors that we associate with, that they're really not, they go to school, they pay their dues, they spend the time, and it's hard. I mean, they got to learn a dang lot of stuff, because it's a big profession.
Oh, yeah.
But then they get out into the field, and often enough, they're only allowed to do what can be paid for. So since it's the insurance companies that are paying for it, and their patients are all on insurance, they show their card at the door, then they can only practice that which the insurance companies tell them they may practice. And the insurance companies give them the lists of drugs and techniques and the procedures and objects and that sort of thing that they're allowed to use. And they can't step outside of that line. If they do, they're in trouble. We have one friend who works in a certain segment of the medical profession and wants to be, big heart, good heart. He wants to be more involved in the intrinsic healing of the body. He wants to be more involved in natural medicine. But if he does, he will lose, he stands the very real possibility of losing most of his income, because he works in a particular segment of modern medicine, and that segment is insurance. And, if he steps out of there, out of that ballpark, or out of that sandlot, or out of that sandbox, very small, he gets smaller and smaller. If he steps out from the sandbox, out into the park to play on the monkey bars, he's now out of medicine and will lose his income.
See, I would refer to that more as a shoebox.
Shoebox.
Sand.
Full of sand, yeah. There you go. It's tough. It's really restricted. And that's interesting because, they really have to rely now on the big manufacturers, the big corporate manufacturers, to not only tell them what their practice is, but how they may practice and what they may use to practice. My question is, or my statement has always been, and I puffed myself up to say this, we in natural medicine, We don't have to worry about those things because, you know, it's all natural. And
and herbs can't hurt you.
And you can take any herb, and everyone knows that herbs can't hurt you. That kind of hubris has gotten us into some real trouble because, you know, number one, it isn't true. But my question is now, are we really just kind of blowing steam? Are we blowing blue smoke when we say that we concentrate more on the body's, on the body's intrinsic ability to heal itself? Well, we're not the healers. We're just helping the body do the healing. The body is the healer. And how much of that is just claptrap when we look at the true state of the industry known as natural medicine, nutraceutical, the nutritional supplement industry? I mean, you know, any mention, you get a group of naturopaths, my colleagues together, 50s and their 60s,
right,
you know, they're approaching, you know, they've paid their dues. They've been in practice. They're 10 years, 10, 5, 5, 10 years away from retirement. You get a group of those together and you ask them to go back to actually pull out of extinct memory what they had to learn as naturopaths in college and go actually back to the making of medicine. Let's pretend that the pharmacy or the nutraceutical companies didn't exist at all, and we had to go back to actually using our resident competence to make the medicines. And I have done this. You watch those naturopaths scowl. First of all, they'll scowl, and then they'll grimace. You know, they'll show you their teeth, and then they'll just kind of get their back up, and then they'll get really stuck up, and then they turn their backs on you and walk away because they absolutely depend upon those bottles.
Yeah.
They absolutely depend upon those labels. You know, they need to, they're stuck in what they're allowed to practice because it's the manufacturers who decide the materials that are at their fingertips, what's available to them. So in a very real sense, it sounds to me and it feels to me as a naturopath looking out into my own profession that there isn't a lot of difference here between natural medicine as a profession and an industry and allopathic medicine. Allopathic medicine is one thing, and the real state of natural medicine, because of the corporate nature of the manufacture of everything that you're allowed to use, is, you know, it's really just kind of a chartreuse allopathy. It's not even green. It's just kind of greenish. Right? I'm not sure what color chartreuse is. It's supposed to be green, isn't it? Kind of a pukey yellow-green.
You will pay homage to the great Lady Google
After the show. We'll Google that. What color is chartreuse? Can we say chartreuse on the radio? Yeah, it's on the list. Chartreuse allopathy. It's not really natural medicine anymore because there's nothing less natural than relying upon a synthetic process for natural remedies. You know, nothing. Let's take Melissa, for example.
Melissa's a good one. Some recent experience.
Yeah, there's a stuff that has some, out of Europe has come some really astounding research, really compelling stuff about regenerating damaged brain tissue and tissue in the circulatory system, and they're using lemon balm of all things. Okay, so In the good old John Christopher Natural School of Natural Healing, you would say that lemon balm then is good. It's good for restoring the brain and the cells of the brain. And so you'd say it's good for that. And so you're gonna ask your manufacturer to make a lemon balm product. So okay,
yeah,
Chief Wellamuckin, you're my manufacturer. I need lemon balm because this research is fantastic. It's really, really good. How would you make me a product?
How would I? Yes,
yeah,
I need apothecary it. Or as
no, you're my manufacturer.
Manufacturer.
You're my corporate manufacturer now, okay? And I need it to be cheap.
Right.
To me, so yeah. I can charge a decent price.
Oh, that's
to...
easy. That's easy.
Okay, how is that easy? What makes that easy?
Well, number one, as a supplement or nutraceutical manufacturer, I am well-stocked in hypromelose gel capsules, which means I can then get on the market.
I was drinking a little water when he... That's too funny. You get... I'm sorry.
You asked me to be specific.
Yeah, hypromelose gel is yep. You know, there's no gluten in there.
Vegetarian gel.
Vegetarian,
yep.
No animal product,
really,
no gluten.
Really, really cheap because it's made of byproducts.
Fantastic stuff. Yeah, fantastic stuff.
Well, next I'm going to get onto the marketplace for melissa. Now, genuine melissa is going to be too expensive, especially the organic stuff. Now, I can get away with non-organic melissa and call it all natural if I just make sure that it's not been in a warehouse for more than 3 years. So I'll go onto the market and I will find the best source. Now, as a manufacturer, the best doesn't mean the best quality. In this case, I know this naturopath, this practitioner wants melissa, as many capsules as they can sell. And so I will find a bulk discount dry form melissa, either in a powder or in the leaf. It's usually the powder. And I'll begin filling capsules. In the meantime, I'll get my marketing department designing a schnazzy new label, all the right keywords, and then we'll commission a couple of bloggers and a newsletter and begin marketing specific key elements of melissa's constituents while filling these capsules with dry herb powder.
Okay, now that's a really key issue because in the research that is so compelling, you know, that is really catching all across the natural health community now is that melissa rebuilds the brain cells and the nervous tissue and the circulatory system. But they used, this was medical research, and they used extract, very finite extractives. In other words, they were very small groups of chemicals that they extracted and they clarified and they cleansed so that they could be administered in therapeutic dose by intravenous injection.
Yeah, we call these pharmacological isolates.
Isolates, yeah. And they put them back together in compounds, kind of like the plant would, but they had to clean them up so that they could stick them into the vein. Now, what's the difference? I could swallow melissa. Shouldn't I be able to swallow the plant and get the same constituents? You should be able to.
A truckload of it.
Yeah. You're going to have to take bales and bales of the stuff, right?
Yeah.
So if I'm buying it, if I'm looking at this great marketing that you've put together and all the blogs and the labels and all the quotations from this research that proves that melissa is good for the brain, and I look at that, how many of those capsules would I have to take really to equate to what was being given to the research subjects?
Well, for some perspective, my Aiden, my brother, he did some research. He was making a formulation that had melissa in it. Now, it's important to remember with melissa, many of its key medicinal constituents are in the volatile oils within the plant.
Those are oils that, when you dry the plant, percolate completely away. They're gone.
Correct.
They disappear. They're volatile because they leave the plant, right?
So we're talking about, and so by comparison, he was looking for essential oil of melissa. The essential oil is loaded with these very specific constituents that would be used in this internal medicine.
Oh, you're right.
These would have been isolated rather than pressed.
Right.
A different extractive process, but you're still refining the same medicinal constituents. And for a tiniest amount of melissa, barely 5 mils of melissa from a wholesale provider of melissa essential oil, he was looking at $90 for 5 mil.
Oh, wow.
A manufacturer is going to take one look at liquid form or this refined essential oil, because that's something that is sometimes popular, enhancing some herbal product by putting a drop of its essential oil in with it.
Right, yeah.
And they're going to go, they will completely set the research aside apart from marketing material. Make sure there's no mention to the actual form in which it was administered.
Oh, we can actually. We can quote the research, but heaven forbid you should actually quote the research. In other words, marketing alludes to research, but doesn't quote research. We know now by sad experience that when you actually quote research, you run the risk of going to jail for fraud, not because the research is incorrect, but because stating the actual research and suggesting that a person might have a reasonable expectation of obtaining the same results as the research subjects is actually a crime in this country. It's theft by deception.
It is. In the, as a matter of perspective, the mere fact that it's that expensive to obtain refined essential oil of Melissa, that fact alone tells you how much Melissa is required to refine volatile oils.
Oh, it's done.
It's so expensive.
Oh my gosh.
That huge amounts of Melissa have to be processed and refined for a mere 5 mil of essential oil. Rose petals, rose oil is exactly the
millions
same way.
Of petals.
You have
for a tiny amount of rose oil. Yeah, I see where you're coming from there. Yeah, true. But so my manufacturer, what you're telling me is that you as my manufacturer would not use the actually therapeutic preparation of Melissa.
Couldn't even look at it. It's unaffordable no matter how you look at it as a manufacturer.
So what you would provide for me would really not be that therapeutically sound then. Is that what you're telling me?
Impossible. It would be impossible. I'd have to revert to the only practical, marketable, commercial application, and that would be the dry form powder, and sell as many capsules as those naturopaths and those practitioners could possibly sell on the market at as many in a dose as possible, because if they're going to get any benefit, it's going to be by overloading these capsules. Which means this product must be made the most popular product on the market for a certain amount of time.
Otherwise, they don't make any money at it. So I'm going to have to swallow, in terms of capsules, I'm going to have to swallow the whole bottle a day.
Essentially, yeah.
To get a therapeutic dose. And then it's in a form that the body can't use. Whereas had I grown some, if I had just grown some, then I could go out and get a handful and make myself a cup of tea every day and get closer to a therapeutic dose because it's fresh.
I'd be volatile oils.
They're all there.
They're all there. Exactly.
Yeah. And as long as I didn't, you know, boil the daylights out of it. I just boiled my water, turned the temperature off, put my plant in, put a lid on there, and infused it for 5 minutes and then drink it, I'm getting a ton. I'm getting almost a therapeutic dose. It still has to go through my digestive system, but the body's smart if we give it the whole plant compounds. So you as my manufacturer are telling me you wouldn't give me whole plant compounds. You couldn't give me whole plant compounds.
No.
Well, here's the dig.
I have to put out several hundred thousand bottles of Melissa.
To make it worth your while.
To make it worth my while as a manufacturer. To keep the price down. That's the key. The price has to stay at a certain margin, which means no other form is feasible.
Okay, so you're telling me that the research is compelling. Mm-hmm. I've called your attention to the research. You've read the research. The research has just knocked your socks off.
So many excellent marketing elements.
And so you take the marketing elements out and reconvince me that I need to buy your powdered process in capsules and sell that to sick people. That is the state of natural medicine. And that's just one example of so many. Mm-hmm. I can't tell you how often we find this. Let's use another one, for example, the reishi mushroom. In China, in Japan, it's reishi. In China, it's lingxi. And in China, it's considered the emperor of all the herbs.
Mm-hmm.
The emperor of the herbs. There was one farmer who found some and took it to the emperor, and the emperor took him away from his family, never let him leave the palace again, so that he couldn't tell anybody where these mushrooms were. Ruined his life because the emperor had to have these. The lingxi is so important in in Chinese traditional medicine that it's just in certain time periods, it's just amazing. Well, now very competent research in the last 20 years has followed up on very competent research from before that.
Really compelling research.
Very compelling. Yeah. And you're finding, you know, not just whack job naturopaths out there, but we are finding medical pathologists who are writing whole books that have this, you know, this reishi mushroom in all over the place because of what it does with certain parts of the immune system. And so you've got a smart public, and they do just exactly what I just asked you as a manufacturer do for me. But they go to the internet, don't they?
Yep.
Just about all of our supplements are decided now, or the information that helps us to decide whether we're going to swallow the stuff or not, for the most part, for these $50 billion worth of supplement sales in Canada and the United States in a year, you know, it's all decided by internet research. So you go on the internet now, and I defy you to find very many manufacturers who make reishi products from the actual fruit body of that mushroom, because it's hard to make a medicine from that mushroom.
It's the same problem as with Melissa. You have to use a certain amount, but then you have complications with the herb itself. These mushrooms take a long time to grow.
The rootstock grows in the trees for a long, long time before they ever put out a fruit body, the mushroom part.
Not to mention you end up ruining your machinery.
This is something that to make a powder out of is kind of difficult. And so what they do is they take sawdust. Somebody figured out how to take sawdust. Well, this stuff grows in trees, right?
Oh, yeah.
The rootstock grows in trees, so the rootstock also grows in sawdust. So they take buckets and buckets and buckets of sawdust, and they grow the rootstock, and then they remove the sawdust, dry the roots, and put that in the capsules. The trouble is that the roots don't have the chemistry.
Correct.
They said the mycelium simply doesn't have the chemistry that the fruit body has. And so they put a little bit of the fruit body in there to make it red, because it's got to be red in color.
Of course.
A red mushroom.
Oh, yeah.
But the rest of it is all dried mycelium. The dried mycelium is not effective. But the dried mycelium can be made in vast quantities for cheap. So you have countless companies on the market today that have reishi mushroom in a product, whereas 20 years ago, 25 years ago, you couldn't find but seven in the United States that even knew what you're talking about.
And all of them exclude the particular detail in the research that identifies which part of the reishi is used.
Right. The research says very clearly, but who goes and actually reads research? And when you do go read research, what are you actually on the internet? There's not space to put the whole research on there. You read an abstract. And because we're trained in America to only pay attention for about 7 minutes, I'm sorry, seven seconds. 7 minutes is a long time. I mean, it's a really long time because we're trained. 7-10 seconds, we lose that train of thought. So when you're on your telephone, your smartphone, and you're doing research on the smartphone, number one, it can't be so small that you can't read it.
Right.
And so it has to be in sound bites. Mm-hmm. And they can take the pertinent information out and say, reishi mushroom is good for the immune system. And that's exactly what they do, because in natural medicine, that's what John Christopher taught us to do.
Yep.
He taught us to read a paragraph. And that mean, and from there, you know everything you need to know about everything. Well, and that's kind of the way the internet is. The internet is perfect for the soundbite kind of competence. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm telling you, it isn't. I'm telling you, it's not adequate at all. And so, one of the things that we're doing here at A Pathway to Healing is exciting. It's really exciting. And that is that we're developing a natural medicine, again, a natural way at approaching medicine that does not rely upon corporations, that does not rely upon soundbite competence. I almost said incompetence, but it's actually soundbite competence. It does not rely upon you know, your pilled formulas. It forces the practitioner to go back and be the pharmacist again. It forces the naturopath and the physiopath to actually go back to making medicine. But it does it in an interesting way. Healthcare is absolutely, you know, it's the crisis of the day.
Yeah.
Medicine has pushed, I mean, modern medicine is in collapse. At the same point where technology is really bringing about amazing, almost, you know, miraculous stuff, the whole industry of medicine is in collapse. And that's the only reason that governments find the need to come in and save the day. You know, I remember when the air traffic controllers went on strike in the 70s and transportation in America collapsed.
Mm-hmm.
The president of the United States had to commando in and demand and command those air traffic controllers to go back to work or go to jail. That's the only time government steps in. So in looking at healthcare, the argument on the Hill in Congress about healthcare is just crazy. You follow it.
Yeah.
You know, you've got this Obamacare, which is an absolute disaster. No question about it. It's so bad that even the providers, even the insurance companies have to bail. They have to try and escape this boondoggle. So much for the market, the marketplace. Mm-hmm. But now we've got the right side of the aisle saying that we're going to come up with an alternative. Here's government coming up with alternative medicine. But it isn't alternative medicine. It's alternative insurance.
Right.
Yeah. So we have conventional traditional insurance, and we have alternative insurance. Sounding kind of familiar. They're none of them ever going to come up with anything for natural medicine.
No.
So, you know, we can hold our breath for hours, for days. We can hold our breath till we die from it. None of these programs will ever approach natural medicine. So one of the other conditions in natural medicine that makes it such a parallel crisis with modern medicine, mm-hmm. with the traditional medicine, is it's become so incredibly expensive. It's terribly expensive for a family, the whole family, to get natural medicine.
Yeah.
That's the goal that we've set at A Pathway to Healing here in Springfield. That's the goal, is to try and figure out how to make it possible for families to get natural medicine and not break the bank. I mean, it's crazy, you know, it's cost prohibitive. So if you have a family that's into alternative health, mm-hmm. and the intrinsic ability of the body to heal itself, but need a little assistance, they got to do it one person at a time, don't they?
Yeah.
Pretty largely, you can't afford it. I mean, you've got to get an assessment. You've got to come in. You've got to talk. You want to talk to somebody with competence.
Hopefully, ideally.
I mean, so anywhere in the United States, you come and you talk to a naturopath or physiopathic doctor, you're going to seek competence, and you're going to check them out.
Mm-hmm.
When you find out that that their various associations do actually certify who they say they are, and, you know, verify their competence, back it up with education and that sort of thing. You go and you meet with them, and you're putting down $150
$200
because it's going to be you're going to spend 45 minutes to an hour with this person. Mm-hmm. You're going to have to. That's just the way it is. If you don't, you might as well not go. And then once, you know, some assessment has been made and a protocol or a plan is put together, you've got to buy stuff to boot. So it's pretty unlikely that a person is going to walk out of an office without having spent $300 to $400 in their first mm-hmm. go. Then there's going to be follow-ups and so forth. Now, you bring a family of four, mom, dad, and two kids into the office. You know, now you're looking at $1,200 to $1,500, and it simply isn't happening, is it?
It's not happening in Missouri.
I don't think it's happening.
I don't think
anywhere.
It's happening anywhere.
No.
I'd like to welcome our co-host, our Chief Ignacio Garcia, Hupater Garcia. Can you hear us, sir?
Can you hear me?
We can.
Yes. Excellent.
That's what that noise was in my ear.
Yes, glad to have you on.
Okay, I thought it was something I was doing. Little crinkly noises, you know, fiddling with the cord on my earphones, and I thought, oh, maybe I better not do that.
Now, Chief, you are out in Columbus, Ohio.
Yeah, that is correct.
And so what, in your opinion, is the state of natural health care and the affordability of natural health care out there in Columbus, Ohio? Because there's a lot of alternative, complementary alternative medicine, a lot of natural medicine in general in that area. You can drive down, in my experience, you could drive down almost every street and find complementary alternative medicine in some form or fashion almost on every road there in Columbus.
So how affordable is it?
Yeah, that's true. I agree with you. You can find alternative types of medicines here in Columbus. And how affordable it is? It's pretty affordable depending where you go. But the state right now, it's just like everybody. Everybody's kind of in that panic mode looking for different ways to heal themselves because they can't afford to do it right now. Everybody's afraid to get sick.
If I'm a mom and a dad and I've got two kids and, I want to go in before flu season, let's say I go in before flu season and we have our first meeting with our naturopathic doctor in Columbus, Ohio, to try and figure out what we can do to keep ourselves, safe from the flu this year. What kind of a bill am I going to go away with for a family of four having four assessments?
Oh, I don't know. My God, that's probably pretty high. I mean, if you go to a regular doctor, and your insurance is, now insurances aren't even covering, our insurance got changed, and they don't cover nearly what they used to cover.
That's conventional medicine.
Yeah, conventional, yes. And it's really expensive.
So now you go down the street to your naturopath, and what are you going to spend?
Well, you're not going to spend nearly as much, but it's still going to be kind of expensive, though.
It's out of pocket. You think about it, it's going to be over $1,000. It's going to be over $800,000 for the four of you to go to that first meeting with the naturopath. Now your follow-ups are going to be less, of course, but still, a doctorate level anything requires a certain amount of respect and. My industry, and I'm talking about my industry here. I'm a board certified doctor of naturopathic medicine. And so I know what I'm talking about and I know what my colleagues have had to go through to get where they are. And so, there's a pretty set fee out there. It's too much. It's too expensive for families. Now, back in the day, a doctor would go around to families and treat the whole family, and the family went on pretty much a plan, and the doctor subsidized that plan. But that family became loyal to the doctor, and they made sure the doctor was taken care of. I'm talking about way back in the day when the doctor was going around in his buggy with his ratty old horse,
Before Warcraft?
Before Warcraft, yeah.
Before Warcraft.
Before Warcraft.
Oh my gosh. Don't forget who you're co-hosting with.
Here in Springfield, we have, when we first started actually working with as a compounding apothecary, where we decided after reading label after label after label and examining the materials actually used, we just threw up our hands and said, we can't even call ourselves natural doctors. We can't even call ourselves practitioners because what we have to work with is such crap. What we have to work with is such garbage, well-marketed, well-labeled, really pretty stuff, and we can make lots of money, but it's garbage. We decided to go back to making it ourselves. A compounding apothecary is one where you go into your master apothecary, whether they're working in connection with a physiopath or a naturopath or not, whether they're just working as the master apothecary themselves, they assess and formulate a plan, and the acting out of the plan, the actual exercise of the plan, is that they go into the apothecary and they make the materials necessary to work out the supplement themselves, and they come back and they hand it to you. Well, we decided to do that, and it's still too expensive for people to do. But what we decided to do in Springfield is, since the government, we should be able to rely on the government to do this, right? But since the government is not thinking along these lines, we decided we're just going to go back to the way our grandparents did it. our great-grandparents. And what we've decided is to create a family whole health plan. Here in Springfield, families, whole families, who want natural medicine can come in and affordably get it. We make it so that they have a monthly payment, and their monthly payment is what they decide they can handle. You know, and then they get the health care, and they remain loyal thereafter. And that's the program that we're trying to build here. And we're working hard on it, and there's been some examples already of some really good experiences. And, you know, the people are resonating with the idea of being able to afford this without having to be forced into an insurance program. It's not an insurance program, but we're providing, again, the means, a way for whole families to come in instead of just one person in the family. Now, how's that working out?
Oh, we have a number of families who could not. There are a few holistic practitioners or naturopathic practitioners in Missouri. Not very many. There's just barely a handful in that market here. But we have a number of families who have been able to put one person in a protocol with such and such a practitioner or such and such a clinic. When more than one person in the family has gotten sick, usually with the same thing.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And through a sensitive care plan, a natural health care plan through the program that we've been using here in Springfield, the whole family have been able to come in, and we ran an assessment through every single member in the family.
Every member of the family. It wasn't just we're assessing the family. Mm-hmm. It's every single member of the family had the same assessment. So we understand the issues now before every single one of them. And they're all different. It's not cookie cutter by any means at all. And the whole family was able to get help.
And they were able to pay a certain amount up front,
mm-hmm,
rather than the whole sum. And the rest we negotiated into reasonable monthly payments. A reasonable payment program well within their monthly budget.
Right, and what was the comment that the mom made? It was kind of funny. Oh, we can handle that. That's what I spend buying my probiotic every month.
So then we told her how to make her probiotic at home.
Yeah. See, that was what she was already spending, buying one supplement of the many that she has to get in order to try and self-treat, self-diagnose, and self-treat her family. Here's the problem. Level of care for naturopaths across the country, and for physiopaths, for master herbalists, for plant medicine across the country, is determined for them by the manufacturers. Level of care is determined by the manufacturers.
Yeah.
And so, you know, not only is it very expensive, but they can't do what they were ostensibly trained to do. Here in Springfield, we found that by going back to making our own medicine the way the old time doctors did,
mm-hmm,
using modern technique and modern research and modern, you know, technology, you know, we make a better product, but we're still making it ourselves. We're not calling some corporation somewhere to make our medicine for us.
No, and yesterday when we were going to see a sufferer of the encephalitis, it was tick-borne, I believe.
Tick-borne, yeah.
What we were dealing with.
Yeah.
I ran a tally afterward of how many powdered supplements, how many capsules the individual would have to have taken in order to get the kind of ingredients. We're not talking about quality of medicine. We're just talking about the number of ingredients that went into the medicine we crafted for her as apothecaries. And she was looking at having to take easily 24 capsules every 2 hours for 8 days
to get the
ingredients in dry herb form.
Right, and then
to address this particular, her digestive system with fever never have been able to handle that much dry herb.
There's no way, and that was the alternative that the internet,
mm-hmm,
gave her. Besides which, in doing her research on her symptoms, to self-diagnose because she couldn't afford to have someone with any competence actually do it, what was her treatment protocol that you recall?
garlic and vitamin C.
Garlic and vitamin C, because that's what Mercola said to take in some article. Or
and Christopher.
Christopher and
Dr.
John
Christopher's
like
that, yeah.
School of Natural Medicine from way back when, and something that she read about Mercola. Okay, so these are things that would not help at this point.
Nope.
They'll help in an overall condition-wise, but not to stop the swelling of the brain and the spinal cord. So, and the supplement or the medicine that we made for her was not throwing the book at her. It wasn't like there were 40 things in there. There's
not
20
things.
There wasn't even 10 things in there.
These were really targeted herbs.
They're
very specific.
Right. They're very specifically targeted the phases of the individual organisms involved. And an apothecary can do that. Whereas your naturopath today out there back out in America land has to just reach back on the shelf and find the label that says, this is good for this and this is good for that. Or get on the internet and read, this is good for this and this is good for that. Well, I'm asking, what the heck is the difference? Our competence has come way, way down. Our need for competence has come way, way down because the corporations have told us what we're allowed to use. Well, here's the net result of that. You wander around the country and you talk to these certified natural health care practitioners, and you find out how they got any credentials to be a certified. Well, who certifies them? You know, what is a certified natural health care professional practitioner?
I don't want to mess with institutions issuing these certificates.
Okay, so let's not name the institutions, but let's look at what they're teaching. They're teaching sound bite herbology.
Yeah.
It's 6 weekends.
6 or 8. Give
six to eight weekend seminars that you listen to on the internet or from a disc.
Mm-hmm.
You listen to it, and you make a book report, and you're competent. That is not competence. And so what you end up doing is you end up looking at this or that, reading this or that, finding out what's good for this and what's good for that without knowing anything about people, without knowing anything about condition, physiology, causation, mechanism of action, protocol, and without knowing anything about the actual plants themselves.
Or good research.
Or how to do research.
To research, how to get to the bottom of a topic.
Yeah, so what we want to create again and what we're trying to, we're kicking it off right here in Springfield. We're pretty excited about it here at the Pathway to Healing. Have I said that enough? Pathway to Healing? Am I allowed to say that more than 7 times? You know, what we're kicking off here is the creation of true competence and then the application of true competence, but in a way that families can afford it. So that this little market zone here of about 250, well, there's some argument whether it's around 250 to 400,000 people in the greater Springfield area. You know, one natural practitioner could very easily see 1,500 people a year. If those 1,500 people were all on a sensitive family health care program, those people would be getting not just the natural healing necessary for one person in their family, but for the whole family. And they are going to be creating or generating a community of people that are loyal to each other and will actually, sit and learn and talk with each other and become much more active in obtaining the kind of competence that's necessary for them to maintain things at home instead of having to default to their medical practitioners, they're professionals. That's what we're after here at A Pathway to Healing, and that's what we're trying to do. There's another example I'd like to give of the level of care in natural medicine across the country that we're trying to overcome here in Springfield. And I think we're doing a good job. I think we are overcoming this problem in our own community. And that is, let me just use an example of another man who came in. He came in for some body work and Chief Wilamutkin is a physiopath who really, really specializes and is amazingly competent in certain types of body work. And one of them is a Native American type, an indigenous type that comes out of our family background, called Ilatskoapé Yeats. They came in for some work. And in the preliminary, you always do an examination. You always do a preliminary assessment and a conversation. Found out that the poor guy had had a hip replacement, a complete hip replacement. And it was over a year ago, and he was still dragging his hip. You watched him come in the door, and it was just horrifying. You could see that hip was not right. That it wasn't, it didn't even look attached. And he's dragging it along. Come to find out, sure enough, the hip replacement had failed. But because of the level of care that he was able to not, or that he was not able to get in modern medicine, it slipped under the rug. It slipped by. That's a real problem because he now has a whole bunch of hardware in his hip that has come loose. The apparatus, the actual appliance, the ball joint and, you know, and all of that is just a work of absolute art. It's just beautiful. But everything else done to hold it in place has failed. And so the whole hip is failing and grinding away with all this hardware in his soft muscles, the soft tissue there in the hip. Without, you know, every time he moves, he's tearing. And that's level of care that he was able to get in the medical profession. He went back to his doctor, and his doctor looked at the x-rays and and he came back to him and he said, well, there's nothing we can do about any of that, and the appliances in there are just all well and good, and everything's good, just don't worry about it, take some ibuprofen and you'll be fine. And he goes to natural health care practitioners and they give him stuff to swallow, you know. He was so stressed out, his inflammatory markers were so high looking at his blood that adaptogens were immediately something that he needed to be taking and helped him a great deal, but that did nothing for his hip. Again, standard of care. You go to a natural healthcare practitioner and, you know, gee, I have pain in my hip, and they have to reach back on the wall and pull out, you know, this herbal,
it's usually a nerving combination.
Yeah, this is good for the nerves, or this is good for pain, or this is
or a joint formula.
You know, you read what's on the label and you give them what's on the label instead of looking at what's there in front of you. So what I asked him was, can we get some new x-rays? And he did. He went and got some new images, and when it came back, it was just an absolute train wreck in there. So now everybody has a responsibility to tell this guy, you've got to go back and have that done again, or you're going to be in a wheelchair the rest of your life. No pill, no capsule, no powder, no tea, no liniment, no nothing is going to fix that. Level of care needs to be based in competence. It needs to be based in knowledge of the anatomy and the physiology, the actions, causation, mechanisms of action, chemistry, and even the botany involved. You can't throw a plant at somebody who's got a big hunk, you know, who's got a big handful of plumber's tape in there and a bunch of broken cables and screws all over the place. I defy you. Arnica on the surface, an arnica lotion is simply not going to work. I don't care how much you stick him on the Zyto, you're not going to find out what homeopathic is going to work there, right? It's not going to happen.
To put this in perspective, after we saw the x-ray, we spent hours searching for x-rays online. Great Lady Google revealed to us broken and bad hip replacements.
Yeah.
We didn't find a single hip image of a hip replacement surgery gone bad that was as bad as what we were looking at.
Oh, it was horrifying. And his doctor told him everything was okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then natural practitioners told him, well, what you really need is you need to learn to meditate so that you can control your stress. You know, they're looking at a year and a half, and he should have been out golfing, but he's still in pain, and they're doing the same thing that the profession does. You need to be on psychotropic drugs.
Yeah.
So here, eat this mud pie. You'll get better. We have a responsibility in our community as a naturopath and as a physiopath we feel like we have a responsibility in our community to provide more. That's what Namenha medicine is about. Namenha is about healing the individual, healing the family, healing the community, healing society, and healing the planet. That is what we do in Namenha. And that's what we're dedicated to here at A Pathway to Healing in Springfield. And as practitioners and ministers of Namenha religion, that is what we do. Mm-hmm. That's what Namenha ministers do with a great deal of competence. We pay, a whole lot of attention to competence. Competence is a huge issue, and it's required. You may not be a minister of Namenha without, you know, competence in the field that you're demanding or that you're claiming, you know, to be competent in.
And in all truth, our own Pele from years and years ago, our leaders, they predicted the demise of the state of natural health in the United States. And in that process, they caused us to add things such as competence and representations into our code of ethical conduct. So, I mean, this is dating back before 2011. Now we're in the field and we're engaged with these sufferers and we're seeing the effects of this terrible natural health care.
Well, it's a collapse. It's a system in collapse.
Yeah.
It's a system in collapse.
And it was predicted by some of our own esteemed Pele years and years ago.
15, 20 years ago. Yeah. Well, that's our discussion for tonight. I sure appreciate the opportunity. Again, I want to plug in with Insights Radio and Ignacio Garcia. Thanks so much, and thanks for being here with us to kind of guide us along the way. We get into these discussions, and I've got a whole bunch of notes here and kind of an outline of what we wanted to talk about.
Hey, how many did you use?
We got through the second page. We're not
Sweet.
Doing too bad. But I think we're going to probably want to expand for another half an hour. We'll see how that goes. Join with us again next week on Tuesday, same time. And, we're gonna record these, and they'll be available. But we sure would like people to sign on and help us celebrate A Pathway to Healing and a new time, a new epoch in natural medicine.
Yeah, and new episode links are posted on Facebook, on our website. Go to our newsletter. Every time we have a new episode upcoming, we post the link, and we look forward to seeing you next week.
So that's www.namenha.org, and you'll find all that information there. We'll see you next week at 7 o'clock.
Thank you, Chief, for joining us.
Hey, signing off.
Good night, gentlemen.
Good night. Thanks a bunch.
We have people out here. They are all settled and ready.